Right, this is a Scoop media briefing. It's Kevin talking to Ross Wilson of the Council of Trade Unions. Ross, recently, in recent days, electoral funding has cropped up, and Gerry Brownlee of the National Party says doesn't seem to see a difference between the exclusive brethren kicking in hundreds of thousands of dollars, possibly millions, into a pro-national campaign and the Council of Trade Unions supporting Labour. Perhaps you'd like to explain.
Well, I think the first difference is that we are a democratic organisation with total transparency. In fact, we're the largest democratic organisation in New Zealand, and our members voluntarily become part of this organisation so that we can collectively take steps to promote and protect the interests of the 300,000 members and their families that we represent. So we're democratic, unlike the exclusive brethren. We're also completely upfront about it, and all of our advertising and public advocacy by way of news media releases, etc., clearly identifies that we are the Council of Trade Unions, and that the publications that we produce are on behalf of the Council of Trade Unions.
And I didn't see any of your female members wearing scarves either.
No, that's true. No scarves, no restrictions. We have a voluntary policy-making process, and of course people are free to join and leave at will without any repercussions, unlike the exclusive brethren.
You are running a campaign though. How much is it worth? And it's run into a bit of trouble with the newspapers association, is that correct?
The usual sort of technical legal issues. I mean, we're not particularly well informed in this area. Let me just say that, first of all, we don't tell our members how to vote, but we do see it as a very important responsibility to help to analyse the respective policies of the political parties, and we produce quite a lot of material that contains comparative analysis. And we actually look at voting records of political parties in Parliament and bring that to our attention. So the first leaflet that we produced had a twofold purpose. Firstly, to urge people to get on the roll and vote. So part of our campaign is actually getting people to enrol and participate in the democratic process. The second was to actually draw attention to the differences in voting in Parliament and support for or opposition to the various measures that are part of our core business, I suppose, the Employment Relations Act, ACC, Health and Safety, Health and Education Services, because we see it as our particular responsibility to inform our members and to act as a sort of public advocate on behalf of working people around these very important employment law and legal protections.
And it's every single one of them has a stamp on it now, though, I understand.
Yeah, I mean, that's... We didn't realise that you had to have a stamp on it, so by a person, an individual person. Our leaflet is clearly branded New Zealand Council of Trade Unions with the PO Box telephone numbers, but after we... published and distributed, or rather published the leaflet, we were contacted by the Chief Electoral Officer on the basis of a complaint, we understand, from the National Party that we were breaching the Electoral Act by not having a line on it saying authorised by, in this case, Ross Wilson, and giving a street address for me. So we then had to get a little rubber stamp made, and we had to stamp the 100,000 leaflets that we'd printed with a stamp saying authorised by Ross Wilson, 178 Willis Street, Wellington. That then complied with the Electoral Act. We then looked at getting the leaflet published in the newspaper. So we approached Mr Gould, Lincoln
Mr.
Gould,
of the
who's the Executive Director of the New Zealand Newspaper Publishers Association.
Who's represented on that? Is it Fairfax and APN?
I think it's all of the newspapers.
But the two big ones would be Fairfax and APN, which are owned by Australian companies.
Yeah, Australian companies. And they basically, the NPO acts as as the control, I suppose, for this sort of thing. Lincoln Gould replied that he thought the leaflet just complied with the Electoral Act in that it didn't require any sort of authorisation by other by political parties, because it simply is informative in providing information about the voting records of the political parties around those core issues that we're particularly concerned with in the workplace employment law area. We then prepared a newspaper advertisement, not a large one, but that we were going to publish in the Sunday newspapers, based on the leaflet, but not containing all the information in the leaflet. And we sent that through to the NPA, acting on Lincoln Gould's advice, and discovered that his personal assistant not only rejected Mr. Gould's advice that we'd been provided with, but actually said that we had to get the Labour Party's specific authorisation to it, notwithstanding that this actually is a comparative analysis of the policies of National, ACT, Labour, Progressive, Coalition, Greens, New Zealand First, United, ACT and the Māori Party. But we were required at the very last minute, right up to the deadline, to not only get the consent of the Labour Party to it, but
which means, well, that means that it comes out of their electoral budget, is that correct? Or?
Well, that's what we now understand, yes. Although, you know, the Labour Party wasn't aware that we were producing the leaflet, nor was the Labour Party aware that we were actually preparing a newspaper advertisement. But the NPA required us to get their consent, and in fact required Mike Smith of the Labour Party's name to go on the advertisement that went in the Sunday papers. We've subsequently been advised by the Chief Electoral Office that that advice was incorrect.
So the NPA, which is basically Fairfax, APN, Australian-owned papers, wouldn't take your ad, and now you've...
Yeah, that, they said either, you know, you do what we require you to do, or we won't publish the advertisements.
And the Chief Electoral Officer says that's wrong.
The Chief Electoral Officer says that's wrong. And we've asked, in fact, the NPA to republish the ads with my name on, as the authorising person rather than Mike Smith from the Labour Party, but they've refused to do so. So, I mean, yes, we're in a situation where we're now more aware of what the Electoral Act requirements are. We do understand that the cost of the newspaper advertisement would actually be debited to the Labour Party's allocation and of the budget limits that they can spend on electoral advertising.
So the exclusive Wetherin can spend up to $1 million, and that's fine, saying change the government in a blue tick, and because of the newspaper association getting the Electoral Act wrong, that's taken off the Labour Party. That's the short end?
Getting it wrong. Well, they got it wrong to the extent that they required Mike Smith's name to go on to his authorisation.
But that's cost the Labour
Party. But I think it's still a question mark that it may be a valid debit to the Labour Party's spending. So our spending may be allocated to the Labour Party spending. Although, again, I would question why that was so and not the case in respect of the Progressive Coalition or the Greens, who we also appointed had over the past 6 years voted with the Labour Party for those measures, those legislative measures like the employment laws and minimum wage increases and health and safety laws that we're drawing attention to. So this wasn't really a strong sort of advocacy leaflet for any particular political party. It was actually an information leaflet to our union members, so that they could actually get an informed choice and actually use this information to make their own decision about who they voted for.
Just one more thing on the old exclusive Wetherin business. I understand you've had some dealings with them in the past. That they weren't offering to fund the CTU, though, were they?
No, they came to see me they accosted me actually in Parliament, in the parliamentary gallery at the time of the employment relations amendments last year, when my I don't know if you recall, but I was asked to go down to the back of the chamber to meet with Paul Swain over the Exclusive Brethren's proposed amendments that they wanted to the bill that was going through Parliament. And
that was the identity card crisis, from memory. Is that the one?
Yeah, there was a Carter, what's his name, Carter from the South Island National MP, made a complaint. And while I was in the House, and all of the Exclusive Brethren were in the gallery, and so my existence was drawn attention to, and they approached me to talk about it and asked if they could come and see me. They did come and see me several weeks later. I agreed to see them here at the CTU. We had a polite discussion. I'd have to say, I think they seriously misled me, because they emphasised very strongly that their religion didn't permit them to be involved in a union, to be involved in political activity, and you know, all of the revelations of the last few days indicate that probably at that time they were also planning and preparing for the campaign work that they're engaged in at the present time, because I think
That they got a special exemption under law because their religion doesn't allow them to be involved in the political process.
They got an exemption in the 2000 Act, and they were seeking last year to broaden that exemption. I don't recall the detail of it, but they were wanting a greater exemption from the legislation than they had at the time.
Okay. What I'd really like to chat to you about, Ross, though, is tax. Tax is the number one issue of this election, we're supposedly told by a number of newspaper editorials. Tax was a big issue in Australia last election with John Howard, but there's some changes in workplace regulation that followed. Can you expand a little bit? Workers got $6 an hour, which I guess is a little bit less than some of John Key's plan.
I think that's exactly the point that we're trying to focus on in our contribution to the election campaign, is to say to people, look, don't just look at the tax cuts, look at the bigger picture. And in particular, look at the National Party's industrial relations policy, for example, which specifically spells out that there would be a return to the Employment Contracts Act of the 1990s, that the Holidays Act would be stripped out, that the health and safety legislation would be stripped out, and in effect we would return to the industrial relations, the very confrontational regime of the 1990s that cost workers at that time a lot of money. And I think we're seeing a repeat of that, but also we're seeing a very close parallel with the Australian experience, where the focus of the campaign was on the tax cuts, and in reality the priority for the Howard government, as for the Brash government, is actually to move very quickly to recover from workers out of their pay packets, out of reduced holidays and leave entitlements, the cost of those tax cuts.
Just speaking about the minimum wage, I was chatting to Wayne Mapp after a Business New Zealand conference, and he said the National Party doesn't have any plans to lower the minimum wage, but it wasn't likely to go up in any term under the National Party. It was just going to, the minimum wage was just going to stay there. What do you think about that, considering in the 1990s the minimum wage didn't go up at all, really, apart
well,
from 80 cents?
Yeah.
Nine years, 80 cents.
I think that's exactly the experience of the 1990s, that the lowest paid simply slipped down the ladder because the National Party didn't, or the national governments of the decade, didn't increase the minimum wage. Now, under this government, there has been an increase every year, and in fact, the total increase for the six-year period of government is 35.7%. And it's very necessary to improve the minimum wage, both in terms of keeping up that very minimal sort of protection for low-wage workers. After all, $9.50 It's a very, very low wage. It's
$12.50 or something.
It's about $13 something in Australia.
Why do you think that everything's pushed, like when Don Brash goes to the factory, he talks about tax cuts and the fact that Australians earn more. Well, Australians earn more than their minimum wages. Is there no correlation between that?
Well, that is the total hypocrisy of Don Brash's comments, and he has frequently comments on the 25% wage disparity between here and Australia, without mentioning that it was the Employment Contracts Act of the National Government of the 1990s and the effect of that created the 25% disparity, without mentioning the fact that the 2005 National Party Industrial Relations Policy commits to going back and doing exactly the same thing again, which will open up that disparity further, and that will also be contributed to by the failure to adjust the minimum wage. I mean, what we need to move to is a higher value, higher skill economy. And one of the first moves that the Irish made, for example, when they addressed this problem of moving to higher value, higher skill, higher wage economy, was to actually move the minimum wage up substantially, because that then requires employers to address productivity and address skills in order to get their profits, rather than simply relying on reducing labour costs and low wages. And that's the failure of the policies of the 1990s in New Zealand, yet the National Party policies seem to be absolutely committed to returning to those failed strategies.
The other thing, though, is National probably will need a coalition partner, and at Business New Zealand I was quite surprised to see that United Future pretty much agreed with every single one of their employment planks. Did that surprise you, that the Centre Party's... Well, I actually thought United Future was probably leaning more towards ACT than National in some of their suggestions.
It didn't surprise me, because, of course, it's my job to monitor the voting records and the policies of the political parties, and I was very much aware that the United Future has not supported any of the measures of the Labor government of the last 6 years, the Employment Relations Act, ACC, health and safety. Not a single legislative benefit to workers has the United Future Party supported. So I think they are over there well to the right. I mean, if you look at the health and safety area, for example, the 2002 amendments put in place a health and safety representative system, which United Future opposed. They opposed it on the basis that it gave too much power to workers themselves and to their unions. Now, we now have the evidence of the effect of that health and safety rep system, and the evidence is that over the past 2 years, the workplace fatality rate in New Zealand has come down by 60%. We attribute that to the health and safety rep system. The Building Industry Council contributes that, acknowledges that's attributable to the health and safety rep system, yet you have a party like United Future that supposedly cares about workers and their families, saying that that legislation, that system of health and safety reps has to be abolished because that's the ideological position that they take along with the National and ACT parties.
The one party that confused me, though, and they confused most journalists, I believe, is New Zealand First, because they wanted the minimum wage raised, but they didn't seem to like unions very much, so they were a bit of a mixture. Do you understand their employment policy? Because I don't think anyone at Business New Zealand a couple of weeks ago did.
I've never quite understood where New Zealand First stood on these issues, but if you look at their voting record, despite what they have said about expressions of concern about low-paid workers, for example, expressions of concern about casual workers, expressions of concern about the accident compensation scheme and health and safety, they too have voted against parental leave, against the health and safety amendments, against the renationalisation of ACC, against the Employment Relations Act in 2000, and against the 2004 amendments to it. They've voted with the National Party on all of those measures that were there to to help workers. Now, that's why it strains my credibility to accept that New Zealand First, the latest claim by Winston Peters, that he's the workers' advocate. There's absolutely no evidence of that in their voting record in Parliament over the last 6 years.
So legislatively, there's absolutely nothing to say that New Zealand First is a workers' party other than Winston just trying to play off Labour or National Services.
I'd have to say that that's correct. I mean, they make the right noises, but when it comes to the voting, no, they don't do it.
Just rounding up, a couple of weeks ago it came to note that Don Brash, some of his emails had gone missing, or emails to him, and in an article in the Sunday Star Times he said, despite the close contact he had between people like Roger Kerr and Roger Douglas, that the Business Roundtable has not had any influence on national policies. Yet I was reading the Business Roundtable's employment policy, and it seems pretty similar. Have you checked through the Business Roundtable and employment policies with National?
Of course. Look, there's absolutely no question about it. We felt from the time that Don Brash was elected to as leader of the National Party that they were close to the Business Roundtable. It's simply confirmation of what those of us, you know, who are kind of involved in politics in Wellington already know. Of course they're close to the National Party. I mean, Don Brash is on the ACT Zone acknowledgement, essentially an ACT MP in everything but name. Yes, the Business Roundtable is back in business politically with a Brash-led national government, and all of their policies reflect the Business Roundtable policies, to a great extent.
And their employment policy, I mean, they want to pull out of Kyoto, so that's environment, that's pretty similar to the Business Roundtable, but their employment policy seems to have a number of planks that are in common with the Business Roundtable. In fact, I couldn't pick too many differences.
Yeah, no, they're very close. I mean, I think left to their own devices, the Business Roundtable would go a lot further. But then Don Brash is on record over the years in his speeches to the Knowledge Wave Conference, to the Hayek Society in Britain, of wanting to go much further as well, abolishing the minimum wage completely, doing away with an Employment Contracts Act, and just having an employment at will so that the employer can do what they like as far as their employees are concerned. Those are the sort of things that Don Brash and the Business Roundtable are completely at one on in their own sort of personal views.
That's interesting, because I read one of some of the Australian literature about employees do what they want, which in a way it might work if you're like a flash creative advertising genius or you work in IT, but could you explain how these policies of workers bargaining with an employer works if you're stacking a shelf in a supermarket? Or?
Well, I mean, as Wayne Mapp asserted in his interview with you a few weeks ago, he doesn't accept, and the National Party doesn't accept, that there is ever any inequality of bargaining power between an employer and an employee. Well,
So when they strike... When the strike in Auckland came in, he seemed to think that they would have got more money if they'd said, "Hi, we'd like, you know, a 5% wage increase. Here's 4%. Take it." He seemed to think that was how it was going. Is that? Do you think that's credible belief? That worker says, "Could I have my 5%?" They say, "You're not in a union. Here, have more money."
Well, not only is that overwhelmingly at odds with historical experience everywhere in the world, it's also at odds with the constitution of the International Labour Organization, which is based on the premise, acknowledged by all governments, including New Zealand, that there is an inherent inequality of bargaining power between employers and employees. It's also at odds with the experience in New Zealand in the 1990s and in the last year or so, where we have seen an increase in company profits of something like 44%, according to the Reserve Bank, over a four-year period. Most non-unionised workers haven't had a wage increase at all. So, you know, the last quarterly figures show that unionised workers had a median increase of about 5%, which reflects our 5% wage campaign. non-union workers had a median increase of about 2%.
So you're saying, because what I found interesting was that I haven't done any statistics or looked at it, but would people who are in a union that had some industrial action, say bus drivers, they've actually got more money out of it than their tax cut that they were going to get back?
Of course, yes. I mean, a 5% increase in the average wage would yield, you know, something like $40 a week.
The tax cut was about $10 a week then.
For 90% of workers under the National Party's tax cuts would get around $10 a week. So the other thing is that if you're genuinely concerned, as Don Brash asserts he is, about the disparity in wages between Australia and New Zealand resulting in us losing skilled workers, a tax cut doesn't address that at all, but a wage increase does. And unless we close that wage gap in actual wages over the next few years, we're going to continue to lose skilled workers, not only to Australia but to other countries.
Right. But Michael Cullen, like, he will sort of attack the tax cut by talking about the Oberac and Prefew and stuff. That it does cause a bit of eye glazing. Do you think perhaps Labor may have mentioned employment relations a little more? Are you a little disappointed?
Yes, I am a bit disappointed that there hasn't been that much focus on that from a political level in the Labor Party. I think that from our point of view, you know, that is a piece of crucial information for workers, that in fact the National Party is running a deliberate strategy of focusing on tax cuts when all the other cuts will follow, and it's actually there in the National Party's policy: the wage cuts, the job cuts, particularly in the public service, the Holidays Act cuts, the health and safety protection cuts. You know, it's all going to actually happen, and I think that New Zealand workers should be made aware of that so that they can make a proper choice about the future. And we're starting to actually see that now. I mean, there is starting an increasing level of awareness, partly as a result of our work, quite independently of the Labor Party, as I said. We've got our own approach to this. We started, when we started thinking about the election campaign, I think our thinking was, look, a lot of workers think that the starting point is what's already in place, what's been put in place by the Labor-led governments of the last 6 years, and that the policies are about what is added to it. Well, in fact, you know, a national government would sweep away all of those benefits that workers have gained over the last 6 years through the legislative process, and there would be a big price in terms of social and direct wages in the workers' pocket as a result of that, which would far outweigh the tax cuts. That there's no substitute for a real increase in wages, and not only do workers need it, but actually our country needs to move to making a big investment in skills and using that skill base to improve the value and the added sophistication of the products that we produce, and the National Party is going to lead us again down a low wage path and low skill path.
Is it a bit unfair then that you are some pinged with being part of, you know, supporting the Labor Party when you probably support the Greens and the Progressives seem to have similar policies?
That's exactly been, I think it is unfair, because our that's exactly been our approach. We start the process at the beginning of the election year cycle of working within the CTU unions, drawing on their members' views, asking them what their priorities are. We establish our own policy position, and then we measure that against political parties. And we then say to our members, well, you know, in these key areas, these are the political parties that are actually have supported measures that assist us and you, and these are the policies of what they intend to do. Now, you make the choice. You decide what how you're going to vote. The CTU certainly isn't going to tell you how to vote, but we'll certainly provide you with the information to assist you to make an informed choice. Particularly in a situation of the current campaign, where you have parties like the National Party putting policy information up on their website without publicly announcing it. You know, things that will be detrimental to workers, like the introduction of market rents for state housing, like the minimum wage.
Do you think Don Brash goes and talks about the minimum wage not going up for 3 years when he visits those factories?
No, of course they don't. All they talk about is the tax cuts. And they don't talk about the return to the Employment Contracts Act. They don't talk about taking away their Holidays Act entitlements. They don't talk about that they won't get 4 weeks annual leave anymore. Yeah,
is it in the Dominion Post?
I think it's very disappointing, actually. I wrote a letter to the Dominion Post, for example, in response to an article that said the employment relations policies were pretty bland and there wasn't much interest there.
It's because the editorial, I've read editorials in the Dominion Post that absolutely slam any the recent Labor's recent employment regulations.
That's true. I mean, I'm not suggesting that this is an editorial policy, but they certainly did refuse to publish my letter to the editor on the basis that they don't publish letters from organisations. I do have a business column every month or so, and I was certainly able to use that to spell out the National Party's industrial relations policies. So, you know, to that extent I've been able to get space in the Don Post. But I've been disappointed that there has been very little focus. As the kind of downside of the National Party's tax cuts, that they will be put, if elected, would certainly put in place all of these measures that would enable the employer to take the benefits of the tax cuts away again.
Cool. Thanks very much.
Okay.